Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Hello everyone and welcome to Inside Track with me, Luca Allam. I am delighted to have Anthony Tuma. He's a singer, he's a songwriter, he also has his own business. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Luca. Thank you for having me. I'm pleasure. Very happy to be here.
Absolute pleasure to have you.
Lovely house, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah. You have quite a journey for someone still so young.
Yeah, I mean, I've been through some stuff. Pretty much good stuff.
Good stuff, pretty much, right?
You're
32 at the moment, right?
32, just turned 32.
But your life started at 21. I would say from a recognition perspective.
Yeah,
is that fair to say?
My artistic life started at 21.
Which we'll get into that. I want to talk to you about so many things. I want to talk to you about your starting of your journey, your singing journey back when you were 21. I want to talk about the fame and how you had to deal with that back in your hometown of Lebanon.
Yep.
I want to talk about the years since then, what you're doing now. And I also want to talk to you about the big show formats and if they are the right way actually for people to step into the music industry.
That's
still relevant. There's a lot to cover. First and foremost, I see you have a mug with you. What's going on?
I have a mug. That's me and my wife.
Wonderful.
That was our one year wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
But the story behind it is the first 1 month, 2 months, 3 months anniversary, they were all mugs.
Yeah.
When I first met her.
Wow.
And we used to travel around. Yeah. And every time we went to a city or a country, we would take a picture and I would print it on a mug.
Beautiful.
And then I stopped doing it for like 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, she wasn't happy about that, I'm guessing.
I don't think she noticed. and then I got this for our 1 year anniversary.
Very nice. Yeah. I'm sure she's delighted. And as you can see from behind us, we've actually managed to get a photo of your lovely wife.
That was the first thing I saw. I was like, who's the pretty? Oh, that's my wife.
Yeah. So he walked in. He was like, oh, okay. I'm just so happy it matches the mug matching that. You can't plan these things.
Yeah.
And you also seem to have something else with you, which is off camera, but maybe we'll get into that a little bit later.
Surprise.
The first question I have to you really is, when you were 21 years old and you go to France, did you have any idea what your life would then look like after appearing on The Voice?
No, I mean, you think you have an idea. You think you know, like, what fame looks like or what people knowing you feels like. Your own conception of how things would be if I was successful.
Yeah.
But I didn't really, really know.
Yeah, like, no idea what was going to hit you.
No, not really.
So,
and even the whole The Voice experience, I was very, I would say, even almost pessimistic about it.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't apply to be on The Voice. My mom actually put my video online.
Did she? Okay.
Yeah. And she told me after she had done it. And my first reaction was like, Mom, I'm a 20-year-old kid in Lebanon. Yeah. They have so many talents in Europe. They're not going to come and spend all this money to get this young guy to Paris and be on a show. Like, why would they do that? You know, like, be real about this.
Yeah.
And like a month later, they called me. They're like, come. I had to do like at least 3 or 4 auditions before the one people saw on TV. So I was doing auditions in the back with the like head of label, head of I don't know what, before we even got to the point when we're on screen and we're being filmed. So it was a long process and it wasn't always like a pleasant process.
Like what? What was unpleasant about it?
Lots of stress, lots of you don't know what's going to happen, even like expenses wise. Like I was in France and I had to go back and forth and I was like, okay, let me just stay in France then.
Yeah.
And then the funny, not funny thing is I had to work in a architecture office. I have nothing to do with architecture. Just it was the only opportunity I had.
Yeah.
And I was basically a secretary in that small actuary architecture office. And the guy wasn't very nice. let's put it that way.
So you're doing that job to pay the bills, to keep you in France, to help keep you basically part of the show and to potentially extend that.
Yeah. Period. And I thought maybe if I was like to make contacts and stuff, I need to be here.
Yeah.
Even though the show wasn't on TV yet. So it took 3 months between the day I filmed and the day it aired.
Yeah.
So these 3 months, I was living in France. I was living alone for the first time. I was paying rent for the first time, doing laundry.
You're living in the real world.
Yeah, and it really hit me.
The European life.
Yeah. And I had my really kind boss. Like, asking me to sit in the car so that he doesn't get a fine. So I would just sit in the car
and
wait there.
Interesting, interesting.
During lunch break. So it was just weird.
Talk to me about your psychology, because you're a 21 years old guy, right? You're leaving home for the first time. Do you have any expectations? Are you going just thinking, oh, I've got nothing to lose, we'll see what happens? Or are you going, this is my big break, I've got to make sure I nail it?
Yeah, I was going with that attitude. Like, this is my big break. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
I need to prove myself to myself. I need to prove myself to everybody in Lebanon who's skeptical about, like, not singing in Arabic in the Arab world and all that stuff. So I had all that in the back of my mind. Plus, I need to perform well, sing well, not mess up the lyrics, not mess up the singing, not get sick, because it's Europe and it's cold.
It's a high-pressured environment, right? And you're someone so young, and you're putting your own pressure on that.
Yeah, of course.
Like, before I ask any more questions, typically in my show, I always ask my guests for a safe word. So if there's a question that I'm going to ask that they're a little bit uncomfortable with, do you have a safe word in mind?
Yeah, I can use a safe word. I'm going to use a limiter.
Okay.
A limiter is a plugin you use on a song.
Okay.
And it basically limits the volume of how loud it can be. This is in simple terms.
Nice.
To not get
plus,
too technical.
Luca, you've crossed your limit, so it makes a lot of sense. I like
it's
that.
It's like a limiter.
So you go on The Voice, right? Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that experience. Again, as a young man, leaving home for the first time.
Okay, so I go to The Voice. I get there. The expenses there are not covered before you make it actually on the show. So I'm there trying to figure out where to live. I'm staying at my parents' friend's house outside of Paris, which is like a 1 hour train ride.
And sorry to interrupt, but your parents are Lebanese?
Yeah, my parents are both Lebanese. They fled the country during the war, like early ones.
Yep.
And they went to France. And I was born
it's
in France.
It's like, which war? There's like a lot of wars. Yeah, the early ones. Yeah, yeah, I like that.
And then I went back to, we went back to Lebanon when I was 3 years old. So I grew up in Lebanon. So I hadn't lived in France ever. It was my first time living there. So I had to get accustomed to the people there, to how the culture, to... I knew the language, which made everything easier. And I had the passport, which also made everything easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, the experience was, I found myself in that place. I needed to sing well. I was surrounded by really, really talented singers. Like, really. There is talent in Lebanon.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, like, English and French and, like, Western way of singing, I felt like they were way out of my league.
Another level, maybe.
Yeah. And it put a lot of pressure on me. And I kept thinking, how am I going to stand out with all these people around me being so talented? The Voice, the audition, it couldn't have gone better, honestly.
Very nice.
I sang Billie Jean.
I know. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
But just before we get to that, you're coming from Lebanon. Did you feel when you're there and you're looking around, did you feel at any point, I don't want to say the word inferior, but did you feel like you didn't really belong there because you're coming from a smaller country?
I did. And I think, I mean, I'm not afraid to say it. I really do believe that Lebanese, I'm going to talk about Lebanese because I don't want to talk about the whole region, but Lebanese people, I really think we have this, we call it Ajenib complex, but basically it's like the complex of people who are from Europe or the US. We always have the sense that they are superior to us, or that they know better, or that we look up to them all the time.
Yeah.
And it's always been that. It's because of the media, it's because of the things we watch, because you feel like they're dominating without getting too political about it. But yeah, I've always felt that. So yes, I did feel like I was inferior or not talented enough. But at the same time, I had this need and this fire in me that I want to prove them wrong, you know, like we're just as good as you guys.
It's a great underdog.
We just need an opportunity.
It's an underdog story, right?
Yeah.
It's a challenger story. It's that little kid, you know, that in Hollywood, they talk about that little girl who went to Hollywood, the bright lights, to try and make it big. She came from a small village. This is you coming from Lebanon in Paris. I'm guessing it was in Paris.
Yeah, it was in Paris. Yeah.
And you're looking around, you're seeing super talented people, and you have to do extra effort to stand out, to get noticed.
And it's not just a talent. It's you see these guys with their managers and publishers and people coming and negotiating label terms before even getting on the show.
Yeah.
And I'm here like, what is publishing? You know? I don't know. What's publishing?
You're still trying to figure out how to do the laundry.
What do you mean, artist manager? Like, I don't have one. Are you talking to me about contract terms? I have no idea. Let me call a lawyer.
Yeah.
Do we have music lawyers in Lebanon? I don't know. Do we? Like, so many things. It's not just the talent, the sheer talent. Because the talent, to be honest, was the part I was basically confident about. Like, I knew if I was there, I have sang the song a million times. I can do it. I know I can do it. And I know my strengths, like when it comes to singing.
Yeah.
But the rest, I was completely oblivious to everything that happens, like in the background, the labels, the deals, the artist management, the publishing side of things. It was really new to me.
Yeah, it's a business, right? So you can't just focus just on the talent. It's everything that goes around it. So talk to me about Billie Jean and singing that song in a live audience with the judges, the moment you first were taken to stage. What's that feeling? Before a note, because you're playing the piano, right?
Yeah.
Before a note's been sung, before a chord's been struck, what's going through your mind?
While I'm on stage...
Just before, so you're just about to go on stage.
Yes. It was pure stress. I felt like, okay, this is it, this is the moment. Don't mess it up. I knew my parents were watching, and I kept thinking, what if they don't turn? What if nobody turns? Who's going to see this? Who's not going to see this? Like, all these thoughts are rushing through your mind. And I'm thinking, don't forget this. The small detail that you're going to sing, don't forget when you go for that note, don't push too much because your voice is going to break. Like, so many things are happening, whether it's singing stuff or just basic everyday stuff. But the second I sat on the piano, played the first chord, I remember, I know it sounds cheesy, but it was really like that. Like, everything was gone. Like, I was in my own bubble. Yeah. You can actually see it. There's a moment in my performance where I break out of that bubble and I realize that, okay, this is happening. You can actually see it. Like,
I've watched it.
I could show you that moment where my eyes lit up and I realized where I am, and you can hear my voice being not great. Like, I'm not very happy with that second half of the performance. Yeah. You can hear me laugh at some point. Like, I really, I let go.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the let go that was supposed to. I didn't plan this.
You let the world in a little bit, right? Because you'd kind of ring fenced everything out.
Yeah.
Your whole life was coming down to those first few moments. That first chord, that first note, you're probably the pressure. You know, if you get that right, you're in a great way. And then you're like, okay, you're getting a bit more confident. Let me try and enjoy the moment. Then you see the moment and it's like this kind of out of world experience where, oh, wow, this is actually really happening. Yeah, I'm actually live. This is real. There's cameras everywhere. But then the judges
are up, they're dancing, the crowd is roaring, and I'm like, okay, this is actually happening, focus.
But the feeling when the judge presses the button, turns around, how does that feel for you? Because you can't go, I made it. Yeah. But at the same time, you must be inside so happy, or relieved, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, it was a feeling of amazing. The first one, I was like, oh, okay, great, I'm in. Like, whatever happens now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they can't take it back. I'm in the show. Yeah. That was the thought.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking, just focus on the singing. Focus on the singing. Yeah, like, don't let it get to you, because it's very easy when you're singing to basically lose it.
100%.
And, yeah.
And Billie Jean is not an easy song.
No, the whole process of choosing the song was really tough, because we went back and forth. I'm someone who likes a lot of genres of music. I play the piano. Do I play? Do I not play? And I don't really get like much of a say.
Yeah.
Like, they get the final decision, not me.
Oh, really?
So we're discussing songs. We're trying songs out. They're allowing me to choose and pick and try and suggest.
Yeah.
But they're going to make the final decision.
Yeah.
And we kept going back and forth. And I kept bringing them back to, okay, but Michael Jackson. Like, Michael Jackson makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He's my favorite artist. I'm playing it. I'm not playing the original version of it. I have my own version of it. Like, I really wanted it to happen. So every time they suggested something else, I would try it. And to be honest, sometimes I would purposely not do it great, like the other songs, so that we come back to Billie Jean. It's like, okay, Billie Jean is still the best option we have. Let's go for it.
Okay.
And I was really happy because they went for my arrangement.
Nice.
Like, the arrangement you hear is basically my idea of how we're going to play the song.
Yeah.
Which for Michael Jackson was a bit risky, I would say.
It was. Yeah. So you get to the semi-final. You don't obviously win it, but you've done so well that everyone back in Lebanon is like, yay, Anthony, we always believed in him. He's always been amazing. He's from us. Did you feel a little bit like, seriously, guys, did you feel a point where, you know, you had to leave Lebanon to become famous in Lebanon? How did that feel?
Big time. It felt frustrating, honestly, because I had been on TV in Lebanon for like random shows. I had been on the radio in Lebanon with one of my songs, and people were always doubtful or pessimistic about, okay, but you can't really sing in English.
By the way, your English is amazing. Second of all, if those who are watching, it's fine. But if you're just listening, you have an amazing voice. I'm not talking about singing. Is this your natural voice, right?
Yeah.
You don't have like a cold or a cough.
No.
This is your natural huskiness.
Voice,
And can I also say, you, Because I mentioned this to you off camera. You look a lot like a Lebanese version of Enrique Iglesias. You're the Lebanese Enrique.
Yeah, I don't mind being
the look,
Enrique's
the package. I'm seeing all of it.
I actually have a song with Enrique Iglesias.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Is that out or coming out?
It's out. It's been out for a while, and okay, it happened very randomly. It was thanks to The Voice.
Yeah.
It happened really randomly. I'll tell you the story. Do you want me to tell the
story
now?
Yeah, Enrique. Okay. What's he like as well? I'd love to know what Enrique is.
Enrique
like.
Is amazing. That's why I take it as a compliment. When anybody says, you look like Enrique, I'm like, yeah, okay, looking is great because he's a good-looking guy. But at the same time, I want to be Enrique.
Yeah, Guys, the Lebanese Enrique right here.
Nice to meet you. the thing is, such a humble guy, down to earth. You feel like you know him. You feel like he's just a dude. At the same time, he's oozing charisma and you can feel his presence in the room. The way it happened is I actually got a quote from the label I was signed to after The Voice, and they were like, Enrique is looking for somebody to have a French version of a song that he's going to release. Because I don't know if you know this, but in France they have a rule on the radio, like if the song has more than 50% French lyrics, you get a better chance of getting it played on the radio.
Okay, so whether it's 51% or 99%, it's the same chance.
Yeah, no, but I mean, if the radio has a quota of French songs that they have to play,
yes,
which I like. Yeah. I like the idea that we are supporting our local music, you know?
Yes.
But he needed like a French dominant song for the French market. And they were looking for somebody to team him up, and they had the same thought as you, like, Anthony could work. Like, I could see Anthony and Enrique next to each other.
Yeah, nice.
And it happened in like 2 weeks.
Wow.
I was flown to Miami.
Wow.
I met Enrique, we recorded the song. I had to write some of the lyrics. It was his melody. Like, the melody was already written and everything. I just had to write the lyrics and like a small bridge part so that it's more French.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole process was really nice. Super nice guy, super humble. Only good things to say about
him. He comes across very well.
Yeah, and you can see it. Yeah. You actually can see
it. A lot of people in the UK, I was living in the UK at the time, they were very jealous of Enrique because of his girlfriend then, Anna Kournikova. I don't know whatever happened to that relationship, but he was very famous in the UK mainly for his relationship with Anna Kournikova than for his music.
They're still I used to be jealous of Enrique, but not for that reason. Actually, I don't know if you've seen this, but he used to, in every show he went to in the world, he used to sing Hero. The song, like, I can be your hero.
Yeah, and you can just see the women just melting.
And not just that, he would get...
The men are melting as well.
he would get a girl
every
show, in every country, up on stage,
and
kiss the girl
really?
During the song.
Like a full-on kiss?
Are we talking
French-style kissing, or are we talking like, you know, the Lebanese...
Like kissing on the mouth, but it's not full-on, it's respected, like respectable, but... He would do that like every day.
So I'm going to turn the TV off
of the
now.
Tour.
I'm going to turn the TV off. Have you ever wanted to do that on any of your gigs?
Yeah, when I was 15 watching that guy, I was like, yeah, I want to be that guy. Like, who wouldn't want to be that guy?
Yeah, nice.
And I mean, it was a great experience. It came out of nowhere. I couldn't believe it. I called my parents. I was like almost close to tears. I was like, this is actually happening. Like, you remember Enrique? We have his album in the car. We used to listen to it together with my parents. Yeah, I'm going to have a song with them. It's crazy.
Like,
it was a really proud moment.
Very nice.
And the song was on the radio, and it was a really nice experience
very nice.
For me.
Very nice. Talking about your voice, we're talking about, after you reached the semifinals, you didn't quite win, but then you had a stardom back in Lebanon, right? And everything that was attributed to that stardom.
You were asking me about how it felt that I got the success when I went out of Lebanon. And I actually want to tell you, I don't know if you know the story, but in the semifinals, something happened. Which was the voting thing.
Yes.
So basically, to make it short, at the end, I sang and there was another guy, right? So it was the semifinals. In my team, we were two left. Me and that other guy, we both sang. The voting system was the judge has 50 points to allocate between the two. Okay?
So you against someone else.
So the coach has to allocate 50 points between me and the other contestant.
Yeah.
And the public at home, the people watching, can vote.
Before you say, what matters more to you? The professional judge or the people watching at home?
The people watching for sure.
Okay.
But it was the total that decided who goes to the final.
Yep.
Okay. So the public voted for me 59% to go to the final. Okay. So now we're left with the coach.
Yeah.
The coach had to decide 50 points. For all the other finalists, they split it like almost evenly. Like they would give a small advantage. They're not allowed to say 25-25. So they would say 26-24 yeah. or 27-23. Like that was yeah. the highest. Yeah. If you
Delta.
Want to, yeah. 27-23.
Yeah.
My coach decided to give him 35 and me 15.
What's the name of the coach?
Jennifer. Okay.
Okay. I guess you're not best friends with Jennifer, right?
No, yeah, we're not. And so what happened is, if you put the total together, I lost by 0.7. If she had given me 16 points, I would have went to the finals. The reason I'm telling you this is yeah. that was one of the main reasons this blew up so much in I Lebanon. See.
So it kind of helped you in a way?
It helped me in the way that everybody was talking about it.
Yeah,
people got to know me so quickly after the show. So it was the audition first, because four judges turned, they were dancing, Lebanese guy. We were always proud of these things when they happen. We were proud when it happened with Mayas at America's Got Talent. And it just, you can see this happening every time. Every time somebody Lebanese succeeds outside of Lebanon, we yeah. jump on it. Okay, it's great, we're supportive. But it would be nice to also support them before they leave the country.
Of course.
So yeah, that was one of the, also the reasons.
So after The Voice, you started producing some great songs, right? Show Me How You Dabke is probably your most famous.
Do you know how to dabke?
I actually do a bit, but there's okay. different, what the thing is, there's different versions of it. So if you go to my village, right, in Lebanon, where my dad's from, it's very different to what they do in Beirut. So you kind of, what I've realized is that there's different versions. You have one that can go up and then like stomp, and then there's the bend, and there's always one guy on the end who's doing some, you know, weird thing with a handkerchief or something. So what was the inspiration behind the song? And, Are you any good at dabking as well? I'd love to know.
Yeah, I mean, I can dabke, like the basic dabke. I can do flips and jumps and...
What? The jumps and flips and dabke?
Yeah, sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, you have really...
Not in my village.
Have you seen the guys who like go on each other's shoulders and they're like almost...
I think in
up
videos.
In the air.
Yeah, I think I have, but I've never seen people actually doing like proper...
And not flips, but like 360 turns, going up and down too much. Like my knees can't handle that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're not that old, mate.
I know.
Wait till you get to your 40s.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough. People look at it like, it's fun jumping around, but it's actually hard what they're doing. Yeah. And I have so much respect for that. Show Me How You Dabke, the song, the process behind it was, I want to do a song where... It actually shows that I'm Lebanese in the song.
Yes.
And like to, like a shout out to my culture and my country where I come from.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do it in a way where it still felt genuine to me. Because people know that I'm not comfortable singing in Arabic. And I don't want to like...
Anna Kaman.
Yeah. And I don't want to just release a song in Arabic. And I want to stay true to my artistic direction.
Yeah.
That's the process of why I wanted to do a song with dabke in it. So I knew I wanted dabke in the song. But I didn't know how I'm going to get to a part where I just put a dabke in a pop song or in a, like an English pop song. And I got this idea of... Every time I'm sitting with somebody who's Lebanese, like pure Lebanese, they would like, you don't sound Lebanese or you don't look Lebanese. Because... I have
you look like Enrique Iglesias, Lebanese version, that's probably why.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and people would also like talk about, like it's funny, earlier you said you have a nice voice when I speak. People don't like my voice when I speak in Lebanon.
Okay.
Most of the time I go on TV or I go on speaking shows, you always get at least like 10 comments about my voice being too high-pitched for an Arab man or I can't roll my R's.
High-pitched?
Yeah. And I can't roll my R's properly in Arabic.
Okay.
So people... Also, like,
can we try? Because I don't know if I can either. Give me a word in Arabic.
If you're asking the wrong guy to try, but can you ask somebody off camera? Give me
any word in Arabic that has a lot of
like
R's.
Like, if you want to say, like, okay, tla la barra.
Tla la barra.
Yeah, you can roll your R's.
Yeah.
And I can now fake the R rolling, but like 5 years ago, I would say tla la barra.
Yeah.
Okay? And people would say, I can't speak Arabic.
Yeah, but a lot of people have these kind of things in their mouth.
Yeah, but it's so obvious.
Or something else.
In Arabic, it's so obvious because it's part of a language. Okay. Like so many words have these rolled R's in them.
Yeah.
And it's just an anatomic thing. Yeah. And people always thought that I grew up outside of Lebanon. That's why I have that. Or they started speaking to me in French, even though they can't speak French. They would like mess up their French just to try to speak to me.
I see.
Thinking I can't speak in Arabic. And I would I would answer in Arabic and they would keep going in English and French.
But you're obviously very proud of being Lebanese, right?
I grew up
I can see it. What is the thing that you're most proud of when it comes to being from Lebanon?
I'm really proud of everything I've learned in Lebanon. Like, I feel like Lebanon exposes you to challenges and to different situations that teach you a lot of things. That's for one. And I feel like Lebanon has a lot of cultural influences from around the world. We were colonized by the French. You can obviously feel it when you go to Beirut and around Beirut. And I really think that taught me a lot.
Yeah.
And I know it's almost cliche, but I really do believe that Lebanese people are resilient.
Yeah.
And they have this, whatever happens, will find a way to be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, sometimes they go overboard with it. But I really did learn that in Lebanon. Yeah. And I really did learn that from the people around me. And the thing that I would say I'm most proud of is that if you want something big done with little resources, Lebanon is the place, to me, in my opinion. You see so many people doing so many big things, starting with little resources. And I felt like this gives you hope. Like, if these guys can do it, if these guys can actually find a way to make a living, to find a solution for no electricity, find a solution for no water, find solutions for everything, basically, because you have to. Taught me that. And I really felt that, because I came to Dubai when I was 14. And I could see some of the differences with my friends from people who grew up in a very safe environment, very everything is safe and everything is taken care of, which is beautiful, which is something I really appreciate now that I'm 32 and living in Dubai. I really love that. At the same time, I could really feel the difference between me and my classmate when we were put in uncomfortable situations, when we were put in situations where we had to handle adversity or handle stress. And I think I'm very proud of that.
So Show Me How You Dab Kit, in a way, is like a homage, right? You want to give back some, you know, the pride back to Lebanon from what you feel about the country, which is great.
The idea I had to link it in a humorous way was the fact that people always, when I met Jessica, she also felt like I wasn't a pure, like, typical Lebanese man. And I really used to hate that sentence. Everybody, every time somebody told me, like, you're not a typical Arab man, I was like, what's a typical Arab man? What is it? Do I have to, like...
I have no idea.
I don't know how PG the podcast is, but do I have to scratch and wear, like...
You can do anything
What's a typical Arabic man for you?
Yeah.
I am a typical Arab man. I have the family values of an Arab man. I speak the language fluently. I like the food. Yeah. I grew up in Arab streets. I grew up in the Arab culture. I am a typical Arab man. I don't have a low-pitched voice, yes. I don't like to curse, yes. I don't like to hit on women. But why are you associating these things with typical Arab men? No, typical Arab man is not that. That's a typical idiot in any country. That's not a typical Arab man, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I had this idea that I'm meeting this girl and I'm talking to her, and in the middle of the sentence, you go like, oh, you're not really Lebanese. You have to prove to me that you're Lebanese. How am I going to prove to you that I'm actually Lebanese? Show me how you dabke. And that's how I linked
it
together.
Really? That's how it came
Yeah,
about.
And that's what the song says. And,
I love
and
it.
People, the song says...
I didn't realize it was about Jessica when she...
It wasn't about Jessica.
Yeah, but
it was
how,
like,
it came about.
It was like these different situations that gave me the idea. Like, oh, prove to me that you are Lebanese. Okay, I can dabke. I'll show you how I dabke. And that's where it came from. And the whole setup for the dabke drop is that I'm meeting this girl and she's good. Like, listen, Saraha, I don't like English, which is something I've heard so many times. Like Saraha, I'm not happy in English. If you want us to talk, at least show me how you dabke. Yeah. And that's where the drop comes in. And I was like, okay, found it.
So off camera, maybe on social, me and you will we'll do a bit of dab king, perhaps.
Yes, I would love to.
Right, ready to do a bit of improv. By the way, you haven't...
I have a question for you.
Okay, come on, sure.
You're Lebanese, right?
My dad's Lebanese, yes.
Your dad's Lebanese. Did you live in Lebanon growing up?
I never lived in Lebanon. I have very similar to you, so I've had that most of my life. My mum is from Italy. I was brought up between the UK and Nigeria. That's where my dad that's where my dad was working, right? He was born actually there, and he lived there for about 45-50 years.
So do you speak Arabic?
Shwai Mishkitir. Yeah. So every time I go back, the problem is I was never taught Arabic. I was in boarding school from a young age. So, and I never had to learn it, and now living in Dubai as long as I have, most people speak English as well. So I've got better 100%, but I face this challenge of, am I Lebanese? Do I feel Lebanese when I go there? I don't really feel fully Lebanese, but I kind of want to be. At the same time, when I'm in the UK, I don't really feel English. I kind of want to be as well. When I'm in Italy, I definitely don't feel Italian, kind of want to be as well. They have parts of Italy that and the sort of the culture that I love and resonate with. And when I go to Nigeria, clearly I don't really look very Nigerian. So, you know, Dubai is a great place because it's a melting pot. Everyone belongs, but then no one belongs at the same time.
Definitely.
And in fact, one of the reasons I'm doing this whole thing is to figure out my own journey and where do I belong and, you know, who am I?
Yeah. So that really resonates with me. That was actually going to be my follow-up question. Do you feel like the fact that your dad is Lebanese, but you don't actually feel Lebanese, has created that like internal identity crisis?
So I'm very proud that my dad is Lebanese and that I am half Lebanese by blood. I'm very proud of that. But I do have a state of mind where I don't feel like everybody else feels. You know, I can't watch Lebanese TV and understand the jokes, the culture, the heritage and all that past, right? I wouldn't know the most famous actor or actress if they walked past me down the street because I never lived there. I never grew up there. So, but I love the Lebanese culture. I love hanging out with Lebanese people. And I married a Lebanese woman and I have two beautiful kids that, you know, will grow up, hopefully not like me, but they'll take the best of me and they'll take the best of their mother. So I'm still trying to figure it out. But I would say is that whoever you are, wherever you're from, as long as you don't go away from how you really feel, you don't break your value system, and you remain authentic, as long as you do that, putting a flag on you here or there, it won't really matter too much.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. I really relate to that. And this has been a journey for me, like, also, like, the past years, trying to understand, like, who am I and why do I have to, like, pick... dominant.
Funny you say that. Gene. Let's get to the questions. We've got a bit of improv here, right? So I've got a bag in it. It's got a bunch of questions. I really want to ask you some of these questions. So put your hand in, pick out a question, read it out, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. Lebanon play, friends, right on point.
I love it. You can't script that, right? So saying, you know, pick a thing. So Lebanon are playing France, right? In whether it's basketball or football, whatever it is, whatever sport, who do you want to win?
Putting me on the spot. Lebanon, for sure.
Lebanon.
I'm more a basketball fan than a football fan.
Who's your favorite basketball player?
Do you say soccer or football? Luka.
Right, football.
Okay, thank you.
Mate, the English, they invented it. We're not going to call it soccer.
Lebanon, play France. I would pick Lebanon, especially in basketball. I'm really, like, the Lebanese national team basketball, like, I'm probably one of their biggest fans.
Really?
I have their jersey. I try to go to every game that I can go.
Which team do you support in Lebanon?
In Lebanon? Yeah. I support Hekme. Okay. Sajes.
Okay.
Do we have an English word for Hekme Sajes?
Don't ask me. I don't speak French or Arabic, so I'm the wrong person.
No, I don't think we ever... That would be wisdom. Yeah. It's not called wisdom, for sure.
Okay.
And but the Lebanese national team, I'm really proud of these guys because they have very little, as I said, very little resources when it comes to like the technical team and the performance team and all that. We have good coaches. We have good everything. But it's just a different level. Like, we're not going to kid ourselves. It's a different level. We're not as well prepared as the US or Europe. Or
the infrastructure isn't there. The money isn't there. But you have got something. And look, Lebanon in basketball, they punch above their weight.
Yes.
Time and time again.
Yes. And it's inspiring to me.
Yeah, yeah. Fadi Al-Khatib was one of the one of the OGs, right?
Yes.
Of that generation.
I actually became friends with Fadi after The Voice and stuff. I was starstruck the first time I saw him. I was like, Fadi's talking to me. He knows me. He's talking to me. Yeah. And Fadi's a great guy.
Of course he does. Should we do the next question? So I'm really glad that question came up.
Most famous person in your phone.
Look at that. After talking about Fadi and Enrique, who is, if I open your phone right now, who is the most famous person in your phone?
I'm trying to think.
And can't say my wife because she's famous. I don't want to cop out. I want a real celebrity that people would know.
I don't know if you know him, but I would say his name is Christophe Maillet.
Okay.
He's a French artist.
Okay. I don't know him.
He's huge.
Is he?
Yeah, he's...
I'm going to look really bad not knowing him when I say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, no.
So I'll pretend that
I do. Really, he's really big in France and in the French-speaking countries. So obviously you don't listen to French music.
I don't.
So it's totally fine for you not to know him. But if I would say, like, the most, like, famous, like, sells out tours constantly for 20 years, famous, Christophe Maillet.
Very nice.
I don't have Enrique's
You don't
number.
Have... If you have Anna Kournikova in your phone, that would be even worse.
I have his personal email address.
Okay. That's
I don't know if that counts.
That's something. yeah. I love it. Let's move on. Next ball.
Toughest thing about being a singer nowadays. Toughest thing is people get bored very easily. next song mentality, next chorus mentality, like first 30 seconds, we already decided if we like the song or not. That's one. Two, the cluster is much bigger.
Yeah.
Instagram, TikTok, and all these new platforms, the streaming platforms, YouTube.
Like, how do you even begin now? Like, if you're a 21-year-old, going back to you, and you don't have a voice, just kind of show, or, you know, Country's Got Talent, America's Got Talent, or whatever. How do you start a music career?
Always small circle. Starts with your small circle, your school, your city, your small circle. Get bigger from there. Put your music out. Don't be afraid to put music out. Artists tend to be very hard on themselves and not putting things out unless they're perfect. They're never perfect.
Yeah.
You're going to put out songs that you're going to hate in 2 years, looking back at them.
Yeah.
And but it's part of the process. And I think now in 2024, it's a bit different than before.
Yeah.
You have to go for quantity. Before, you could put out...
That's really sad, isn't it? Volume is important, more important than the quality of what you're actually producing.
Unfortunately, yes. I really do believe that. I really can see it. Yeah. Like, if you put out an album every 3 years these days...
You just become a factory. And the problem is that when you... To write a great song, right? To be a real songwriter, it can take months. It can take a year before you actually pick up a pen. I mean, old school pen type, whatever.
Yes.
But to write a song, a melody that is strong, powerful, emotive, you can't just produce that, you know, like a factory. So how do you get around that? How do you keep the authenticity of your music whilst also trying to match the growing demand for music to make it and be successful and make a career out of it?
I think collaborations are important. Like, you need to find people who are in the same mindset as you and try to team up with them, and because you can't do it by yourself, like, all the time. And also, a lot of people who can sing are not songwriters, so you need people to write songs for them, and then you need someone to produce, and then you need someone to mix and master.
Yeah.
So connections, trying to talk, trying to collaborate with other artists, trying to learn as much as you can of what you can do by yourself, and then build from there. It's tough. I mean, it's really tough.
You didn't even mention talent. You mentioned all these other things, except...
I know. I mean, talent, to me, is like a given.
Is it, though? Because you have a lot of artists who have made a lot of money selling albums... who honestly have a very average voice.
Yeah, but I mean, the voice is not the only talent, right?
If you're a singer, really feel, I mean, it helps.
I really feel like that, okay, so there's a difference between if you want to be a singer, like you can be a singer, proper singer, and you can make a living out of singing without being ever famous. Like, nobody can know your name.
Yeah.
You can sing on songs, on dance songs, and be on Spotify. Do you know any of the people who sing the dance songs in the clubs? You don't know these people. They're singers, full-time singers. You can do a guide singing. You can do like sessionists. You can sing backing vocals. You can be a singer, full-on singer, your entire life without being ever on camera, ever famous, ever known as a singer.
Do you want to be famous?
And you're still successful. I wanted to be famous when I was younger.
Yeah. How do you feel about it now? Now you're older.
I don't really care that much about it anymore.
Okay.
If it comes with the music, I'm happy about it.
Okay.
But I don't really care. No, I'll be honest. I cared about it. I wanted to be famous. When I was 20, 21, I wanted to be Michael Jackson famous.
Yeah.
I wanted to be
loved
by it. Because I associated being famous to being loved by many.
Yeah.
And I associated being famous to being the best in what you do.
Yeah.
When you get older, you realize that's not how it works. It's not the best people who are the most famous, or the most talented who are the most famous. It's just the right time, the right people, the right connections, and sometimes the sacrifices that you're willing or not willing to make. And that includes sacrificing your values, your family, time with your family, a lot of things that you have to decide at the end of the day if it's worth it or not. Yeah. Is fame worth sacrificing your mental health and your well-being and your time with your family? Because you have to sometimes, not always. That becomes a personal choice. If it's worth it for you, good for you.
Yeah.
For me, it isn't.
Everyone knew you in Lebanon back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Now when you go through the streets, do people recognize you or not? And what's your psychology around that? Do you feel like, oh, I missed how it was? Or do you feel like it's still there, or are you trying to avoid it? So where's your mindset at the moment when it comes to handling fame, from where you were to where you are today?
I mean, the main difference is, and you were talking at the beginning when we started talking, you mentioned about wanting to talk about big shows, like big TV shows and stuff.
It's coming up.
So the thing is, I learned to differentiate between people who know me, because they've heard of me in the context of a competition. Because I did The Voice and I did Dancing with the Stars. So people know me.
Yeah.
Like, they still recognize me. They know who I am. But there's now a difference to me between somebody who knows me and likes me as, it's the guy from the TV. and the people who actually know me, my music, listen to my songs, stream my songs, come to my concerts. There's a big difference between these fans and these fans. And do I miss it? Of course, it was a pleasant thing back then when I first, because it meant success. Now, I would rather have 500 fans that come to every show than have millions of followers and millions of people who know me and recognize me on the street, but don't really listen to my music or don't like me for my music. Yeah. Like, the main thing is music.
And you genuinely believe that?
Yeah? I really do.
Amazing. You're very talented. I've listened to you before. And I know being a song, you know, being a writer, being a songwriter now and a singer in this day and age is tough. And you need to have a great voice, you need to have great talent, and you need to have that perseverance, determination, and a great team around you. But it starts with the talent. And I've seen so many people that have been so well marketed that their career has been amplified off not that much. Yeah. And others who have so much talent that haven't the backing, the marketing support, whatever you name it, yeah, who just, unfortunately, they haven't been able to reach, you know, scale, reach the masses to get people can enjoy their music.
But that's why I was saying the nuance and talent.
Yeah.
So let's take Britney Spears as an example.
Yeah.
Some people would say she's not the most talented singer.
Yeah.
As a singer, as a vocalist. But she had a talent.
Yeah.
She had a talent to be that comfortable on camera, the way she dances, to captivate. She had a talent for knowing what people want to see, what people want to do. That's
awesome. It was a marketer's dream. It was an advertiser's, marketer's, music industry's dream when she first came out. She was like 17, 18, Baby Hit One More Time.
Yes.
You know, it was such an iconic period as well. Christina Aguilera followed, Justin Timberlake followed. So that period coming all from the Disney Club, that she was the right place, right time, and marketers, music industry jumped on her because they recognized the potential of this brand and what brand Britney could look like.
And then the talent of the marketeer comes in.
Yeah.
So that's a talent as well.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, 100%. They can see the package and like, you know, I can take something like this versus someone who doesn't necessarily have an angle, have a this, have a that. Anyway, you have an angle to Lebanese Enrique. We've established that. But look, you're a brilliant singer, and I know you're working on some stuff. Look, if you're okay with it, I'd love to hear something that you're working on.
Of course. Of course. I'll play you one of my favorite songs.
Oh, wow. You just so happen to have a guitar here. Yeah. Look at that. Huh? What are the chances?
Coincidence.
So what are we going to listen to?
Yeah, what's I'm going to sing Baklava. So that's another way of me saying, listen guys, I'm still Lebanese.
Yes.
You know what a baklava is?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, so
is it an Arabic thing? Is it a Turkish? What is baklava?
I don't want to get into
that whole. We don't get into a geopolitical fight about like, the baklava.
Who's behind the tabbouleh and who's behind the
hummus? The hummus is the tough one, right?
I grew up in Lebanon. We do baklava in Lebanon.
Yeah.
It's a Lebanese baklava that I'm singing.
Amazing.
So Baklava is a song I wrote. It's in English and some French, and it's a pure pop love song. And it's very 2000s, like Justin Timberlake. I actually mentioned Justin Timberlake in the second verse, which you're not going to hear.
JT. God, we love a bit JT.
Yeah. So, it's very me. I love the song.
You can, by the way, you don't have to look at me when you're playing it, because it might be a little awkward. You can always look back at your wife.
And my wife.
That makes it easier for you.
Girl, I think you dropped your crown. Let me pick it up with my jaw right off the ground. Wait, I just heard it, that was lame. I just meant to ask you where you're from and what's your name. Whoa, Placido, Argentina. The way you move your body got me thinking you're Latina. Tell me, could you be from the Middle East? Cause the way you're looking at me got me so weak in the knees. Cause baby, you're a baklava, so sweet. Honey, you're a mic dropper, a queen. The way you sizzle like some hot lava, sexy. Go ahead and tell your mama, merci, merci.
Wow, mate.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a shame there's no one else watching live to be able to applaud. That's fantastic. That's really, really
Thank
good.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, honestly, you have a brilliant voice. And I'm not just saying that because you're literally a meter away from me, but you have a brilliant voice. And you play the piano, you play the guitar, you speak multiple languages, you can sing in multiple languages. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Thank you so much.
Pretty impressive.
Thank you.
So that's
can
your
you sing?
Pas du tout.
I heard a rumor that you were in a tribute band.
That would probably be my wife telling you, look, I did a bit of university tribute band singing.
Okay.
I don't feel that comfortable singing.
No,
right
I'm not
now,
gonna put you on the spot
but,
and ask you to sing.
Yeah, no, it was you know, we all go through a phase where we think we're gonna be famous. So we had a bunch of us where we're at university, and we tried to copy a little bit of two different bands at the time. and it was Blue. Remember Blue in the UK? Yes. And G Unit. So yeah, it was a mixture between Blue and G Unit. So we
that
became
sounds great.
We became
way.
Blue Unit.
Yeah, Blue Unit.
That was our
but
group.
Do you actually sing and rap then?
We were terrible. I don't even want to go down that route. Yeah. It was over 20 years ago, so let's park that to one side. Okay. Maybe on another show. But
I'm curious to know, like, the direction of the band. Was we sing was and
no,
rap?
There was four people in each, right? So you kind of had to, you had to learn the lyrics of one person in each of the different songs that they had.
Okay.
Right. So I was going to be one person in this band, I was going to be one person in that band, and so on and so forth. So any song, when it's that person's time to sing, it would be mine, regardless if I could or I couldn't. That's all I'm going to share.
Okay.
I'm using my own safe
Noted.
Word. Limiter is being enforced right now.
All right.
Let's do another ball.
Yeah,
but that was brilliant, mate. Fantastic.
Thank you so
really,
much.
Really good.
Thank you. The Depke or the Moonwalk?
So this is about, obviously it's a tribute back to Billie Jean, right?
Yes.
And your start of your career,
yeah,
because it was the song that launched your career, right?
Yes.
Michael Jackson was obviously famous for his dancing. Moonwalk was his dance, right?
Yeah.
And then you obviously have the Depke. So this is a bit of a fun question, but
yes,
you know, you're choosing the Depke or you're choosing the Moonwalk?
I'm choosing the Depke. I feel like the Moonwalk is Michael Jackson's. Like, nobody's taking that from him.
People make a living copying Michael Jackson.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Full time, they make a lot of money copying.
But they're
him.
Still copying Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll go for the Depke for this one.
Who invented the Depke? Any ideas?
The story I know and that I love, but yeah, I don't quote me on this because
okay,
I don't know.
It's okay.
What I know is that because I was actually researching that before I did the song.
Okay.
And apparently, the Depke came from villagers. It was like a stomping routine for agriculture purposes, so that they would put something on the ground,
really?
And in order to maximize like the efficiency and the time and the whole process,
yeah,
they would do synchronized stomping that's on the floor to
really?
Get everything like straightened out and everything, and that's how the Depke started.
Really,
like from originally, and I really do believe
it's
music and
story.
Dancing always started from. From these situations.
Does it make a sound though if you're stomping on soil? Or does it, I mean, I don't know, does it?
I mean, it's more the synchronicity of
okay,
it.
Okay.
I think it's more like the synchronized movement of stomping and the moving and stomping and the moving. Or at least that's how my imagination.
I've got this image now in my head of a bunch of basically
yeah, exactly.
farmers holding hands, just walking around
exactly,
stomping.
Exactly.
Left, right, center.
That's how I imagined it too. Like when I read that story, I was like, that must be true.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And going back to the song, so when you hear it in a bar in Lebanon or in a club or anywhere
yeah.
on the music, on the stereo, on the radio, like how do you feel when you hear that song?
I feel amazing. It's one of my favorite feelings.
Yeah.
You mean my song?
Yeah, your
song.
Yeah.
It's one of my. I actually like 2 days ago I was driving and I heard Baklava on the radio here in Dubai.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's the feeling I chase. Like
yes.
actually chase this feeling.
Amazing.
Of, two things, live music, like performing on stage in front of people, concerts, that's a feeling I'm always chasing. And I'm always, in the back of my mind, I always know that one day it's going to stop.
Yeah.
And I'm dreading that day.
Yeah.
And for the radio, same. I really love this hearing my songs on the radio.
So is the insight when you're on stage, it's the adrenaline. Also, when you finish playing or you finish.
No.
So it's when you're doing it. Is
I
that the
crash
time?
When I finish.
Okay.
You have no idea how bad of a crash. Like the next day,
yeah.
you can't talk to me the next day.
Okay.
Like not pissed, angry, can't
yeah,
talk
yeah.
to me.
You're
I'm
just exhausted.
Sad,
yeah.
not talk to me. Like I'm in my corner. I probably don't go out of the house.
Yeah.
I really crash after the concert. It's a very big high being on stage singing and hearing people sing lyrics and music that you have written.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't describe it to anyone because
yeah.
you have to actually live it
yeah.
in order to understand it. But it's to me, it's the highest form of
yeah.
recognition. That's the highest form to me. Because
yeah.
I wrote a melody in my house and a lyric
yeah.
that has translated into people resonating with that and singing it back to me.
Yeah,
I feel like, I mean, it's magical.
So let's talk about your wife.
Talk about magical.
Valentine, yeah, because that's what I was thinking. But I was thinking Valentine's Day, her birthday.
Yeah.
Do you have pressure to write her a song every Valentine's Day, every birthday?
No, honestly.
Does she get bored of you? Say, oh, here's another song. Here he goes again. Like, talk to me about that and that relationship.
Honestly, two things. One, she never gets bored. And I always think one day she's going to get bored. And she doesn't. She still shows up to every concert. Every time she can, she's available. She's there. She listens, even if it's small performance. Like not so long ago, I had a performance, it was like three, four songs that I'm going to sing for a private corporate event. And I was on the phone with her and she was like, I wish I was there. Like, why? Why would you wish?
Yeah.
Like, why? It's not even like a pleasant thing. That yeah. It's like not a performance. It's work to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's one. Two, for your Valentine's and making songs. I have written so many songs about Jessica that are all out. That I don't feel the need to write it on Valentine's Day.
So you've got enough, what we call it, your points in the bank, right?
Yes.
You've got, so there's no need for you to go out and create something new, fresh for.
I've written songs.
Do you know how difficult that is for someone who can't write, who can't sing like that? You know, so you're upstaging every man out there. So there's people who are saying you're not a real Lebanese man, because there's no Lebanese man going there serenading their wives with these beautiful songs.
No, I mean, she inspired them. So I wrote them and I put them out. There's a song called Don't Go. This is when I was going to visit her, and she used to live in Germany, and I used to go visit her, and she used to go to work in the morning, and I don't have anything to do. And that's where that feeling came, like, don't go, like, and I know you have to focus on your career, but I wish I was your career, and that, these are the lyrics of the song, and that's one. And recently, past year, I wrote a song called You Make It Okay, which is basically everything we just talked about. So it talks about, like, everything is burning, crashing, and everything, and then we talk and you make it okay. So why not write about these things?
Is she your best friend, would you say?
She is one of my best friends.
Nice.
She is one of my best friends.
Kids?
But I do make it a point that I have best friends. Like, I need to have best friends and
separate.
A wife.
I think
that's important in a relationship.
And
I always say that to her jokingly, like, we need to have people that we complain about each other too. Like, it can't be just you and me
100%.
Complaining about each other to each other.
100%.
Like, I have to dish it out somewhere.
Yeah.
But my best friends love her, and she's really good friends with them, so it's all good.
Kids on the horizon?
Not yet. On the horizon, yes, of course. I would love to have kids. She would love to have kids.
Okay. So Luca is a great name, by the way.
It is, actually.
Enrique is not bad.
And
I think
Luca Tuma is a good
Luca Tuma, there you go. It sounds like an Italian football player in the 1990s. Luca Tuma.
That's true.
By the way, I just noticed you're wearing McQueen's on. Look at that.
Yes, you are too.
Amazing choice. Right, should we do another question?
Big show formats, clickbait, or credible pathway?
Okay, so big show. So big show formats. Are they just clickbait? Are they just there just for the sake of driving our viewers, or are they a legitimate way to actually make a music career?
No, to be...
And you've done a few of them.
I've done two big ones.
Yeah.
And to be honest, you can't say they're clickbait, because the proof is there. They do make or break artists. They do put you in the spotlight. They do give you an opportunity, and they do give you a chance to basically... jump from one level in your career to the next level in your career. And there are countless of examples, like you cannot deny.
Who's the most famous person that's come out of a big show format? Across UK, US, you name it. Where it's The Voice.
I think NSYNC started on a show.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did they really? So I went a bit high-pitched there. Did they?
Yeah. One Direction.
One Direction, yeah.
Started on X Factor or whatever that was.
Yeah. Kelly Clarkson was one of the OGs, I think, on American Idol.
Yeah. So many.
But where are they now? Maybe a One Direction. I'm talking about longevity of career.
No, they had long careers.
Yeah.
I would say, like, NSYNC, Justin Timberlake.
I didn't realize NSYNC came from...
Wasn't NSYNC?
I mean, you're probably right.
Maybe I'm right.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm confusing it maybe with a French boy band, because they started on a show.
Are they called NSYNC?
No, they're not. Who else? Longevity, yes. Okay, so I'll tell you the other side of the coin, basically.
Yeah.
And this I do say a lot, because I get so many young artists coming up to me like, we want to do what you did. Do you advise us to go to The Voice? And I'm like, listen, I'm going to give you both sides and you decide, okay? Yes, it's a platform. Yes, it's a spotlight. Yes, you can be watched by millions and millions of people every week on their TV, in their living room. You're with them. They're connecting to you. They're liking you or not. Yes, that's an opportunity that you can use to promote yourself. On the other side, the show is not about you. The love is not about you. It's about you in a context. It's about you. It's about Anthony being screwed in the semifinals. That's the hype. That's where the hype is. It's about Mayas reaching the finals and winning America's Got Talent. That's the highlight of it. But it's in the context of you in that show. The product is the show. It's not you.
Yeah. You just play a part.
You play a part. And once it's over and the next season comes, we've moved on from you.
Yeah.
Your job is to retain as much as you can and convert as much as you can fans while you are on the show. So what I always tell them is find yourself musically, write songs, finish them, then go on the show. And then use the show the way they're using you, because they're using your story, your image, your sound. They're making you do things sometimes you don't want to do. They're using you. You have to use them too. You have to promote your album while you're on the show and make it a point. Don't be afraid. Because one thing people tend to not realize is that the show needs you as much as you need them. They have the attitude of, we're giving you the biggest chance of your life. You need singers too. You're in season 27. You need talents, you know? Yeah. You need these talents. Yeah. So once you're in and you are on the show, they're not going to let you just walk away, or they're not going to ask you to walk away. So if you don't want to sing that song, don't sing that song. Tell them, I'm not singing that song. Okay, they might be pissed at you. You might not have the best relationship, but think about you the way they're thinking about them. Yeah. So that would be my advice.
Like, all of that is a great, great insight. I just can't help but think these shows churn out year after year people. They use them, they milk them, they kind of spit them out, they move on, right?
Yeah.
And it's like those people are kind of left in a situation where they've tasted fame. They've tasted what that could look like. They've been given an insight into it. But then if you're a young person and you have to then go from that to something else in a relatively short period of time, that can be very damaging psychologically, I'm guessing, right?
No, it's not
and
a
this
guess.
And this is what I wanted. Yeah, this is what I wanted to understand.
For sure. But yes. You know. I went through a really tough time between The Voice and Dancing with the Stars. After a while, when the next season came and I still hadn't released enough songs and all that, I went through a really tough mental... We actually have one of my closest friends off-cam here, people don't know. But she knows, like, we've talked about this so many times. This is where I got anxiety, this is where I had heart palpitations, this is where you could feel the psychological effect physically after these things. And this happens so many times. And I considered myself to be somebody who's pretty aware or pretty like prepared. Like, I wasn't oblivious to the fact that once the show is over, it's not going to be the same attention. Like, I thought I knew and I thought I was ready for it. But how ready can you actually be? Like, at 21 years old, how ready can you actually be to go from everybody's talking about you to feeling like week after week people are talking less and less about you? Yeah. But that's where you mature and you realize that it doesn't matter. People are talking about you or not, in the sense that you don't want people talking about you just to talk about you. Like, people who come up to me now, 12 years later or whatever, and talk to me about what happened 10 years ago, they're obviously not about me. They're obviously about what happened in that show with me.
Yeah.
But if they ask me, why aren't you releasing songs anymore? That's where I know. I'm like, no, you just
follow the show.
You just disconnected.
You follow the show. You don't.
I am releasing songs. Yeah. You're not listening. Yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah, Anthony Tuma does not equal The Voice, right?
Yes.
Anthony Tuma is his own person doing his own
exactly.
thing. And look, you played us a little song at the moment. You've got amazing talent.
Thank you. So
I think
much.
The biggest compliment I could pay you is that there could have been a very high probability that tasting that fame in your local country at such a young age could have left you long term with some real issues to deal with. I look at you now as a 32-year-old. I don't know what you've been through. I don't know what that's like, but I see someone who's very level-headed, very balanced, very mature, very much in control and in charge of their own life. You've obviously got a fantastic wife that also helps anchor you as well.
Wife, family, best friends, and I always say this on every podcast, psychologist.
Yeah. Look, I love your story, mate. I genuinely love your story. And I love that you're just a great guy. And you're just a guy who just wants to write and sing music. And,
yeah,
you're brilliant at it. So just keep doing it.
Thank you so much.
Before I say goodbye, I just want to say, everyone watching or listening, continue to like and to subscribe, please. Thank you for watching. And the biggest thank yous to you, mate. Thank you so much, really.
Thank you for having me. It was really pleasant. I felt like I talked too much. My voice
Not
is dry.
Pas du tout, monsieur. Pas du tout.
Yeah, pas du tout.
I'm so glad we didn't. Yeah. I mean, my French is just terrible.
Do you have like Lebanese expressions that you know that you would use?
Limiter. I have some, but they tend to be a little bit R-rated and sort of outside camera. Maybe I can discuss them. But
can you help us find an English equivalent to Naimon?
Naima. I don't think that exists. I asked my wife the other day about Naima, and it's like when you come out of a shower or something, yeah. Or like when you wake up. It's like they're not two different things.
Because the concept is weird. Because you're almost congratulating somebody for getting a haircut.
Yeah,
or taking a shower.
It doesn't make any sense.
And I always ask people like, how would you say
that? But think about it. Naiman makes sense because it doesn't make sense. And Lebanon, if you think about it, doesn't really make that much
exactly.
sense either. So I think it's perfect. And on that note, let's end it there. Thank you so much, really.
Thank
it's been a
so
real
much.
Pleasure having you, mate. I wish you the best of luck. I'd love to have you back in the future to hear how your story continues to grow. And good luck.
Thank you so much.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.